Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Hello. Hi, good morning, Patrick.
It sounds like you're on a speakerphone. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Just everybody, please, no speakerphones, no Bluetooth. It becomes difficult to hear. We have to mainline on this program so that everything sounds good. One more time, no speakerphones,
no Bluetooth.
Compelling insights. Unpredictable conversations. Encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, howdy doody, and welcome to Hour 2 of the Patrick Madrid Show. If you're just tuning in, my number is 888-914-9149. If you're not just tuning in, my number is still 888-914-9149. It's open season right now, so feel free to call with your question or comment. I've got some Russia stuff I want to talk about. And it just so happens that I had a very lively call with a gentleman who, let's just put it this way. He thinks that Relevant Radio is too mystical. He used the word mystical and that we're not talking enough about, maybe some policy issues that led to where we are now with Russia invading Ukraine and all that's going on. And everybody's dirty, politically speaking. And how come Relevant Radio doesn't talk more about that? Oh, well, okay, I do, to some extent anyway. I'm not trying to, justify myself, except to say that for 3 hours a day, every day, I've spent a fair amount of time talking about this issue. But in any case, if you'd like to hear that lively conversation about an hour after the show is done today, you'll be able to listen to the archive copy that's available on your Relevant Radio app or going to relevantradio.com/Patrick. But I do have a few more things on this topic I'd like to get into, including some audio that we'll share right now. This is the first bit of audio is from Maria Zakharova. She is the, I believe her office is, she is the defense minister for the government of Russia. And you're going to hear her speaking in Russian, but you're also going to hear the English language translation. And this is her claiming on behalf of Putin that there are biological weapons that have been found in Ukraine, and Russia's kind of doing a Khrushchev here, banging his shoe on the podium and saying, what is going on with this? Why do you guys have biological weapons, and who are these going to be used on? I don't want to steal all of her thunder, but I want you to hear, as of this morning, what the Russian government is saying. Now, there's a term, you've heard it before, it's called false flag. And the idea is that a false flag is a faked incident that's designed to provoke people to action. And maybe one of the classic examples of that would be Pearl Harbor. Some people claim, and there may be some merit in this claim. I'm not dismissing it, but there may be some actual merit in the claim that FDR knew ahead of time that the Japanese were going to attack Pearl Harbor, and he intentionally allowed it to happen, willingly sacrificing the innocent men and women who died there in Pearl Harbor on December 7th, so that the American public would be galvanized to enter into World War II. Prior to that, the United States population was generally not disposed to go to war again. This is a war in Europe. Why are we over there again? Why are we dealing with this again? We already did that once. Why do we have to do it again? And so as a way to jolt American public opinion into being willing to go to war, and boy, did we, the theory is that this false flag of Pearl Harbor was actually something that was permitted as a way to make that happen. Now, whether that's true, I don't know. But that is kind of a classic example of what people think of when they think of a false flag. So this is that, if you ask me. We're going to hear from Senator Marco Rubio, who has the same view on this issue. But first, let's listen to Maria Zakharova from the Russian government explaining what they claim is going on with biological weapons.
How many years and with what and they were looking for opportunities to develop this to develop these weapons.
And
we found these weapons. We have found your development. We have found your biological materials that were developed, among other things, for military purposes. And all of that was found in Ukraine. What were you doing there? This is a different land. It's got no borders with you. You don't have any military bases there. What were you doing there under the cover of scientific developments? We had your experts there who were giving instructions to the Ukrainian side how and what to do. Today, based on the fact that this proof cannot be overturned, we would like to get details. The world has to know what you were going to do there, what was the purpose, and what were the schedules, and what was the volume of so-called investment into biological activity in Ukraine. Material, data, everything, please put this on the table.
Okay, so you heard it, and we'll get that linked on the show Twitter feed so you can see it for yourself. A few thoughts. Number one, I don't doubt that maybe there are these labs in Ukraine, and maybe there are connections between the CIA or the U.S. government in some other way. I'm not dismissing those possibilities at all. But here's why what she just said to me, it just doesn't ring true as if they're suddenly now finding this out. Just think about Russia's prowess as an espionage powerhouse. Russia has and has had for the better part of the last 100 years a very sophisticated and powerful and effective espionage program. They know everything. And this is in their backyard. This is where not just are there Russian-speaking Ukrainian citizens on the eastern part of Ukraine, and suddenly now everyone's becoming an expert on Ukraine. I am not an expert on Ukraine. I've never been there. I don't claim to be an expert, but I know how to read, and I know how to look at a map. And if you look at the eastern portion, the Donbas area of Ukraine, Rostov-on-Don, that area on the side, not to mention Crimea below that, you'll see that not only are there deep pockets of citizens of Ukraine who are ethnically Russian and who speak Russian, there are zillions of Russians in there who are there to, among other things, spy on what's going on in Ukraine. Do you think that Russia for a moment would just sort of sit back and not have people undercover looking for whatever might be going on in Ukraine? Of course they are. 24/7, wall to wall, Russia absolutely has, you know, a gazillion spies there. So what strikes me as disingenuous about this speech is that they're saying, oh, well, we just recently found out that you've got the, of course they know these labs are there, if they're there. Of course they know that there are activities on the part of the American government, not to mention other governments going on. Of course they know that. They've always known that. They wouldn't not know that. I was talking to a friend of mine who was a graduate of the Air Force Academy. And in the Air Force, he was in a kind of a special elite group that was learning Russian so that they could do certain things that they're not allowed to talk about publicly, etc. And he said, you have no idea what the Russians are capable of. He said, even back in the 80s and 90s, they had the capability, if you were dialing a phone, like the old touch-tone phones, you know, beep, 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 beep. He said they could tell what the number was that you were dialing just from listening to that or even clicking on a keyboard. I don't know how they can do it, but he said they have very sophisticated ways of determining even what you're typing on a computer keyboard just by the sound of the clicks. That's how sophisticated they are. I'm sure we're easily as good as they are. But my point is there's no way that Russia didn't know about this forever. And now they're saying, oh, look, we found some biological weapons and some labs, and we want to know what this is all about. So now we'll pivot to Senator Marco Rubio, who's basically saying, I don't want to steal his thunder, but he's basically saying this is kind of the buildup to what he's calling a false flag, in which they will use this as a pretext to, I don't know what, nuke something, to send in more troops, who knows what. But here's what Marco Rubio had to say in the Senate yesterday.
Does Ukraine have chemical or biological weapons?
Ukraine has biological research facilities, which, in fact, we are now quite concerned Russian troops, Russian forces may be seeking to gain control of. So we are working with the Ukrainians on how they can prevent any of those research materials from falling into the hands of Russian forces should they approach.
I'm sure you're aware that the Russian propaganda groups are already putting out there all kinds of information about how they've uncovered a plot by the Ukrainians to release biological weapons in the country and with NATO's coordination. If there's a biological or chemical weapon incident or attack inside of Ukraine, is there any doubt in your mind that 100% it would be the Russians that would be behind it?
There is no doubt in my mind, Senator, and it is classic Russian technique to blame on the other guy what they're planning to do themselves.
Okay, so there's more to it, and obviously the issue here is, could this be used as a so-called false flag? I don't know. By the way, that was Victoria Nuland. She's the Undersecretary of State for Political Affairs, and she was being questioned in Congress by Marco Rubio. Now, thankfully, Cyrus, I think people can sleep easier knowing that Vice President Harris has been dispatched yet again to our European allies to reassure them and to help them diplomatically thread the needle. Do we have some audio of some of her recent explanations of the very precarious and very, very, very complicated situation going on over there? Do we have any of that audio?
I'm confident we're in really good hands. She has she has a real fine grasp on the situation.
Okay,
so
let's play.
So Ukraine is a country in Europe. It exists next to another country called Russia. Russia is a bigger country. Russia is a powerful country. Russia decided to invade a smaller country called Ukraine. So basically, that's wrong.
Okay.
Good. Okay.
Now, in all fairness, was she asked to please explain it to me as if I was 5 years old? Because, I mean, if that's what she was asked to do, then she fulfilled her request. But I don't know that that was asked of her that way. Now, we have another audio clip also from the last several days, her in Europe explaining what we need to do. She's talking to our allies in Europe, as I recall. Do we have that audio?
Now, which one? I do have
this. Is where we need to see where we're going?
We need to see.
Yeah.
See,
if you don't have it handy, that's okay.
Well, let's see if this is it. I'll just shoot from the hip.
Let's see.
We are focused on the most vulnerable. And based on my experience, the most vulnerable are women and girls. Racial and ethnic minorities.
That's not it.
Yeah.
That's okay.
I guess wrong.
Well, at least, I mean, that's the news this morning, is that she's been dispatched back to Europe to meet with our allies. So we have an article on that. This is from...
Oh, here. Maybe this is it.
Okay.
We must together, work together to see where we are, where we are headed, where we are going, and our vision for where we should be, but also see it as a moment, yes, to together address the challenges and to work on the opportunities.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you.
So she's over there leading the charge. The article on the Associated Press says that she left on a trip to Warsaw. The Polish government came out yesterday with a plan to transfer these Russian-made fighters that the caller earlier was talking about. A total of about, I think, 27 of them, older MiG models. And the suggestion or the offer was made by Poland to turn these MiG jets over to the Ukrainian pilots so that they can be in a better position to fend off Russian forces. And the goal, according to Poland, is that, you know, we give them these older planes and you, the United States, you give us some American planes, give us some American jets so we can sort of replace what we give them. They didn't run the idea past the Biden administration before going public with it, and thus the Pentagon dismissed the idea as not tenable. Warplanes flying from a U.S. and NATO base into airspace contested with Russia would raise the risk of a war expanding beyond Ukraine. And that's the big issue right now, obviously. So Vice President Harris is headed over there. She's probably over there by now. She was quoted, actually, she was referred to by Daniel Freed, who served as the U.S. ambassador to Poland under Bill Clinton. He was also a senior advisor to George W. Bush and also Barack Obama. He said this fighter jet situation is a messy deal and Vice President Harris will have to go there and smooth things out. There's plenty of discussion on the way ahead that needs to be had with the Poles that is better to have an in-person conversation. So at least she's over there making things right. And what was that advice again that we have to, what is it? We have to together look at where we're, how did she put it? We have to look at where we are and where we're going.
We must together work together to see where we are headed, where we are going, and our vision for where we should be, but also see it as a moment, yes, to together address the challenges and to work on the opportunities.
Okay. Okay. By the way, Cyrus, as if things weren't bleak enough for Russian President Vladimir Putin, a really heavy blow fell yesterday. I mean, if this doesn't shame him into better behavior, I don't know what will. This is just astonishing. The International Judo Federation, you know, the sports governing body, has made the decision to remove Vladimir Putin from all positions on judo's governing body. He's been ousted. It must have sent a shockwave through him when this happened. The International Judo Federation announces that Mr. Vladimir Putin and Mr. Arkady Rotenberg have been removed from all positions held in the International Judo Federation. The Federation did not mention Russia's invasion of Ukraine, but it said on February 27th it was suspending Putin as an honorary International Judo Federation president in light of the ongoing war conflict in Ukraine. But this is nothing new. In 2013, Putin was stripped of his honorary Taekwondo black belt that had been conferred by the World Taekwondo Federation. So that's been taken away.
It appears we must redefine the nature of our association.
And when we return, I will share with you some comments from the Russian Orthodox Patriarch Kirill that's got a lot of people really unhappy with him in Russia, not to mention elsewhere. Talk about a different narrative. And I was referring to that earlier about how some are saying that, well, of course Ukraine deserves this. Of course they do, because Putin doesn't allow gay pride marches. And look, they allow gay pride marches in Ukraine, and Putin is just doing what he has to do. I mean, stuff like that. And it's rather amazing what the Russian Orthodox Patriarch had to say. And I'll share that with you verbatim when we come back from this quick timeout. And your phone calls, please don't despair. I'm coming to you and your phone calls after this timeout. The number to dial, 888-914-9149. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149.
We are back. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show, 888-914-9149. We'll go to Mary Lynn now in Naples. Hi, Mary Lynn.
Oh, hi, Patrick. I called yesterday, and I have two comments. First, when Sister Lucia was alive, she said that heaven accepted Pope John Paul II's consecration. And even though he didn't mention Russia by name, heaven accepted it. That's what she said.
Yeah. Now anyway, I talked about. Hang on, Marilyn. I talked about that at some length, and that even though it was reported that she said that, some people, you know, who are in a position to have some studied opinions on this, they don't think that that actually either happened or maybe it was misreported. So I've heard that same thing, but I don't know that it's absolutely for sure that she did say that. So just be aware of that.
Yeah, no, I didn't hear that. Thank you. Sure. The second thing is, you were talking about the patriarch of Russia, Cyril, his name is, who came out against the Ukrainian having those gay parade in Kiev. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I wish we, as we were as zealous and you know how they're corrupting the children, and you know we go to try to make laws and things. Mm-hmm. But meanwhile, the zeal, you know, like God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. God is.
I know, Mary Lynn. This sounds like it's just sort of going back over the same ground that we covered yesterday. Because that's what you were.
No, I just want to know what you think. Where is our zeal? Like, what is your opinion? When are we going to be zealous about?
Let me ask you a question, Mary Lynn. Are you zealous?
I don't know. I wish I was zealous. Sometimes I think I'm a little zealous, but how do we be zealous? Like, I know we pray, and I know we speak out when we have to, but I admire the fact that some people just go out there and say, this is wrong, and we won't have it. Like, how do you see that? Like, when are we going to do that?
Well, see, this is the thing. Some people, and you're talking about Catholic folk, I assume, right?
Well, all of us who believe in morality, let's put it that way.
Okay, fair enough. So my view, Mary Lynn, is that some people will never do that. They'll never do what you're asking because they can't be bothered. Some people are already doing that and are very... I don't want to say noisy in a negative sense. They're very public in their denunciation of these things. And most people are somewhere in the middle. Most people try to do something. But you know what? You can get out in the street and you can shout and you can pound your fist and you can go to meetings or go on social media and you can do all those things. And ultimately, that, in my view, is not going to change anything. But you know what you can do, and maybe you yourself are already doing it. But as Our Lady said, pray the rosary. Pray the rosary. Pray the rosary. Pope John Paul II said, pray the rosary. It's a powerful weapon. Now, as Americans, it seems to me, we have a tendency, and it's a bad one, to think that there's always an app for that. We can always fix this if we're busy enough, if we involve ourselves in hectic programs of activity and we demonstrate and we go out on the streets. None of those things are bad in themselves, but often they're ineffective in accomplishing anything lasting or real. Rather, it makes like those ridiculous women's marches where they had the pink hats on. All that really did was just make them feel good about themselves. All that, it didn't accomplish anything. And yes, there are times, like look at the Philippines when people power was going on in the mid-1980s and the people were able to rally publicly and they ousted President Marcos, and that was a good thing. So I'm not saying that it can never work, but more often than not, it doesn't work. And in the United States, typically, it's a way for people to be out there feeling like they're doing something heroic when in fact it's not amounting to much of anything. But the rosary is a powerful weapon that Our Lady says that anybody can pray, and all of us should be praying it. So when you say, when are we going to stand up? I'd say, when are we going to kneel down? My standing up or your standing up is not going to do anything. But your kneeling down and my kneeling down and praying the rosary can accomplish an awful lot, personally. And I think that's where the answer lies. Now, there's more to it, obviously. There's diplomacy and statecraft and foreign policy and how we vote. And I mean, there's a myriad of things that go into it. I don't mean to suggest otherwise. But the one thing that every single person listening to the sound of my voice right now can do immediately is pray the rosary. And Our Lady, every time she appears, she seems to be saying the same thing, pray the rosary. And it's not just her. I mean, Pope John Paul II, I quoted him from back in 1980. So that to me seems to be a proactive way of doing something that really is effective. I appreciate the call, Marilyn. Thank you. Let's go now to Laura in Bushnell, Pennsylvania. Bushtail, excuse me, Pennsylvania. Hello, Laura.
Hello there.
All right, Laura's not ready. Let's go to Margaret in Chicago. Good morning, Margaret.
Hi. I just wanted to say that, you know, whether the Pope consecrated Russia or not, we didn't do our part either. We were supposed to do First Saturdays. We're supposed to pray the rosary every day. You know, I don't even remember any time I went to a mass where some priest said, pray the rosary, go to First Saturdays. It's not even talked about. So it's not just the consecration. We have to do our parts, and we're not.
Are you neglecting to pray the rosary every day, Margaret? I pray the rosary every day faithfully, every single day.
I pray four times a day. I'm in a rosary group.
Good. So here's my point. I agree with you in a certain sense. I don't agree with your indictment to say we aren't doing anything. Okay. If you're not doing something, that's on you. But it's not fair to say we are not doing anything. And here's why. Because there are countless good, faithful Catholic folk just like you who are doing something. And they are praying the rosary. They are going to the Five First Saturdays devotion. They are making acts of reparation. They are fasting. They are doing these things. And I know that because I know many of them, and I'm sure you do too. So I personally, I don't accept the narrative that we aren't doing enough. Some people aren't doing anything. That's true. But a lot of people are. And I think it's unhelpful, honestly, to portray it as if everybody is just sitting back and doing nothing, when you and I both know there are plenty of people who are doing something. That's my reaction to the point you're making. What do you think?
Okay, this is what I did a few months ago. I wrote a letter to the cardinal in my area, Cardinal Supich. I wrote one to the parishes in my area, and I actually wrote one to the Pope, asking that at the end of every Mass, the priest says, remember to say your rosary. Okay, my priest at my parish tells a little joke at the end of Mass. And I think if you could just replace it with, hey, remember to pray your rosary. Remember First Fridays. Remember First Saturdays. And I don't hear it, and I haven't gotten a response from any of these people. And what is so hard about saying these things? We have to, in my rosary group, when Russia invaded Ukraine, and I brought up Fatima. No one had heard of what the three secrets were. They said, oh, I remember that from my childhood. What is that? So I think what I'm saying is, yeah, there are a certain amount of people that are doing it, but not enough. I think we all need to do it. And I think the church itself needs to say, okay, these are the things we have to do. And there's plenty of time in the Mass to just say, remember to do First Fridays, and this is why we do them. Remember to do First Saturdays, and this is why we do them. And remember to pray your rosary.
Okay.
With all these letters that I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And this
I think it's admirable.
Russian recurring.
I think it's admirable that you're encouraging people to do that. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, human nature being what it is, you will always be faced with that kind of apathy on the part of the average rank and file Catholic who just doesn't get it. It doesn't click for him. So I think it's admirable that you're making this effort, and God bless you for it. And please keep doing it. But don't become maybe I could put it this way. Don't become overly pessimistic, or don't become overly discouraged. You know, we have to live in the church as it is. And each one of us will do our own part, or we won't do our own part. But that's up to Jesus. You know, he's the one in charge of these things. And I do agree with you that we should be encouraging, certainly, our priests and bishops. You know, we would like to hear more about this. We'd like to hear more about this. Please talk more about this. But we can't force it to happen. And if it doesn't happen, it's not our fault that it's not happening, is what I'm trying to say.
No, I'm not blaming you.
Well, I don't mean me personally. What I mean is, like, when you started off by saying we're not doing enough, you know, that kind of language suggests that nobody's doing anything. And I'm just trying to look at the positive here.
But there are people. I agree. There are some people. Yes, I do agree. But I think, honestly, and I don't mean to sound pessimistic, but I honestly think the vast majority of, I mean, we have so many fallen away Catholics and so many, there's so many more prayers that could be said and they're not being said. That's all. People do, when they talk about Fatima, no one talks about our end of the deal. Everybody talks about the Pope, and I agree, the Pope, I'm worried about, was it consecrated or not? So my only thing I'm concerned about is don't just count on the Pope. You have to do your part too.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, Margaret, and I hope this cheers you up a little bit. If you listen to Relevant Radio for any length of time, this was the complaint that an earlier call from the last hour. He was complaining about the fact that Relevant Radio is incessantly talking about how we should be praying the rosary and we should be listening to Our Lady's requests on that. So thankfully, Relevant Radio is certainly doing that. And there are others, bishops and priests, who do that, and I'm grateful for that. And to the extent that others don't, then let's pray for them and show them good example. Thanks, Margaret. I appreciate it. And we're friends. I just had a somewhat different reaction maybe to what you were saying. Thank you. Let's go. Well, actually, yeah, I think we can do this. Let's go to Julia in Bettendorf, Iowa. Good morning, Julia.
Good morning, Patrick. I had a question about, you know how God says, love your enemies, do good to those who persecute you? Should we love the devil?
No, for this reason, that when Jesus said those things, he was referring to our neighbor, meaning fellow human beings. And the reason that we can do that for our fellow human beings is because human beings, as you know, we can change our minds. You can commit a sin and then be sorry for it and go to confession and then maybe fall into sin again. So in this life as human beings, we are able to change our minds and change our lives. And that's why Jesus said we should pray for other people, including our enemies. But this doesn't apply to the angels, because the angels are different from human beings in that their decisions are permanent. They're instantaneous and permanent. And they don't reason their way toward a conclusion like you and I do, where you think about something and you study it and you think about it some more, and then you make a decision about how you feel. And you might change your mind at some point. Angels aren't like that at all. Their intellects, being pure spirits, they make their decisions instantly and permanently. So that means that there's no reason for us to pray for the angels in heaven, because they've made their decision for God. They don't need our prayers. Nor can we pray for the devil or the fallen angels, because they've made their decision and our prayers can't help them. They'll never change. There's no way they could ever repent. So that's part of the mystery of the difference between angels and human beings. And that's why we pray for human beings, but we don't pray for angels. We don't pray for the devil, for example.
Okay. But who are my neighbors? The people who live next to me, or?
That's such a great question. They are your neighbors, those people who live next to you. But your neighbor, in a general sense, just refers to all other human beings, people that you come into contact with, maybe people that you'll never meet, people who are living in Ukraine right now, for example, and you're praying for them that they would be kept safe. You're helping your neighbor that way. They're your neighbors in a broader sense. Isn't that interesting? Well, thank you. I appreciate the phone call. We're going to take a quick timeout. We'll come back with more of your phone calls. And don't worry, I am going to read you what the Moscow Patriarch in the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, had to say. It's got a lot of people hot under the collar, because he's, in essence, he's basically validating what Vladimir Putin is doing. I'll share that with you on the other side of this quick timeout. You have a special place in God's plan for the world. Learning about Christ's role in history can change your life and strengthen your faith. Right now, get free access to Christendom College's online history class at principalsclasses.com/Madrid.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Oh, she's done? I'm always waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Well, sometimes. By the way, she usually gives out the number.
Play this music a little bit more. This is a kid shredding on a bass ukulele. This is a ukulele. You got to see this kid. It's amazing. What's this one called, Cyrus?
I just have it labeled as UBS. So I don't know what that is.
Yeah, so this is a kid. And he's at like 15 years old, and he's on a ukulele. I was never that good. Oh, man. Okay, I'm getting jealous here. Moscow patriarch stokes Orthodox tensions with war remarks. This is from the Associated Press. So take it with a grain of salt. Russian Orthodox patriarch Kirill, leader of Russia's dominant religious group, has sent his strongest signal yet, justifying his country's invasion of Ukraine, describing the conflict as part of a struggle against sin and pressure from liberal foreigners to hold gay parades as the price of admission to their ranks. Kirill, a longtime ally of Putin, had already refrained from criticizing the Russian invasion, alienating many in the Ukrainian Orthodox churches who had previously stayed loyal to the Moscow Patriarch during a schism in their country. Now, I'll just pause there. In Ukraine, there was a division between the Ukrainian Orthodox believers with regard to allegiance to the Patriarch of Constantinople and the Patriarch of Moscow. And so this is a political division that has to do with who's more loyal to Russia and who's, you know, more loyal to, they don't want to be part of the Russian Confederation. So that's sort of a little allusion to what's going on there. Several of these former loyalists are now snubbing Kirill in their public prayers, with some demanding independence from the Moscow Church, even as their country's political independence is imperiled. Kirill, in a sermon delivered Sunday before the start of Orthodox Lent, echoed Putin's unfounded claims that Ukraine was engaged in the quote-unquote extermination of Russian loyalists in Donbas, the breakaway eastern region of Ukraine held since 2014 by two Russian-backed separatist groups. Kirill focused virtually all of his talk on the war about Donbas, with no mention of Russia's widespread invasion and its bombardment of civilian targets. He depicted the war in spiritual terms. So here's some a few quotes from his speech. He says, "We have entered into a struggle that has not a physical but a metaphysical significance." He says that the people in the Donbas region were suffering for their fundamental rejection of the so-called values that are offered today by those who claim world power. He claimed that this unnamed world power is posing a test for the loyalty of countries by demanding that they hold gay pride parades to join a global club of nations with its own ideas of freedom and excess consumption. Now, keep in mind, this is the Associated Press writing this. There are some Catholic leaders who hold a similar view. Pope Francis is not one of them, who hold a similar view, proposing that this is part of the quote-unquote Great Reset, and that Klaus Schwab and George Soros and the billionaire fat cats who are pulling the strings, in their view, of what they think of as the deep state, etc., that this is really what's going on in the background, and that, you know, poor old Russia really has no choice but to fight against the gay pride parades. That's kind of the angle that I understand Patriarch Kirill to be coming from. Numerous bishops in the Ukrainian Orthodox Church have authorized their priests not to commemorate Patriarch Kirill in their prayers during public worship services. It's called the Divine Liturgy. A symbolically important statement for Orthodox tradition, which puts a premium on the faithful being in communion with the hierarchy. Since the war began, as many as 15 dioceses of the Orthodox Church of Ukraine had authorized the omission of the patriarch's name, according to the Union of Orthodox Journalists, a news site generally positive in its news about the Moscow-leaning church. Now, I'll pause there to give a little explanation here. At the Mass, we, Latin Rite Catholics, at the Mass, you will hear the priest who's celebrating Mass mention the name of the bishop, the local bishop. And he's named in part because of the tradition that goes back to even the time of the apostles. So St. Ignatius of Antioch, he says, where the bishop is, that's where you have a valid Eucharist. That's where Jesus is. That's where the church is. And he explains it. I'm condensing it here. But he explains it in an ecclesiological way that the unity and the presence of the church is centered upon the person of the bishop in his local church. That doesn't mean that everyone else isn't part of the church, but what he's saying is that he is the visible symbol of the presence of the church, and therefore Jesus in the sacraments, most especially the Eucharist, and the church as a whole, it centers upon the bishop. And so the reason at Mass, and that's not the sole reason, but one big reason at Mass that you hear not only the name of the local bishop mentioned in the prayers during the Eucharistic sacrifice, you'll also hear the name of the Pope. So this is not something unique to Eastern Orthodoxy. This is something that they kept with them after they broke away from the Catholic Church in the 11th century. But it's good that they kept this, because this is a way of publicly stating, I am in communion with the church. I'm in communion with the local bishop. I'm in communion with the Pope. That's what they're referring to here. And it doesn't sound to me as though the Associated Press writer necessarily understood what that meant. But there's a difference, as I understand it, in the Orthodox world, and that is that this takes on an even greater political overtone than it does in the Catholic Church. There is far more sensitivity in the Eastern Orthodox world about who's in communion with whom and who has broken communion with whom. And that, sadly, has been the greater part of the last 1,000 years, roughly, of the Eastern Orthodox experience in going in and out of communion, breaking communion with the Bishop of Rome, breaking communion with the Catholic Church, breaking communion with this patriarch because of this real or perceived problem. And that's what happened in Ukraine in the last, within the last 10 years, and most specifically within the last 5 years, where because of the political machinations and the way in which the Russian Orthodox Church is so intimately connected at many levels with the Russian government, how those in Ukraine who said, we're not Russian, we want to be free, and the Russian Orthodox Church is sort of leaning on the Ukrainian Orthodox Church to be, you know, to be tilting toward Russia politically, so they would break communion by, as it says here, the bishop of a diocese authorizing his priest to say, at your divine liturgy, which we call the Mass, you don't have to say the name of the Russian patriarch. It's a statement. It's a political statement, certainly. To some extent, I guess it's a religious statement, but it's certainly political. It's by saying, we don't accept your authority. And this is a big part of this ongoing wound in the body of Christ between the Orthodox churches and the Catholic Church. And that is a big part of, well, I'm repeating myself now, but it's worth knowing. Just a big part of the process is you publicly let everyone know who you have broken communion with and who you have maintained communion with, et cetera, et cetera. Many Ukrainian Orthodox are shocked that Patriarch Kirill condemned evil in the broadest terms, but said nothing about the war, let alone its initiation by Russia. This according to a professor of anthropology at Pennsylvania State University. She said, in the violence and the deaths and the terror that is engulfing Ukraine right now, I don't think anyone is worried about specific jurisdictions, but this will be a sea change. Well, I think they are worried about specific jurisdictions, because if they feel as though the Russian Orthodox Church holds sway over them in the Ukrainian churches, then that would necessarily mean that they would be expected to be aligned politically with Putin. And they don't want to be aligned with Putin because he's destroying their country. So it's interesting. If you want to read it, it's worth, I think it's well worth the time to help understand that part of the world that is deeply involved in what's going on in Russia and in Ukraine right now. Excuse me. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Mandy in Marshfield, Wisconsin. Hello, Mandy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I was listening. Yes. I was listening earlier today, and I came in sort of midpoint in a conversation you were having mm-hmm. with a caller who was asking about the consecration of Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and kind of why hasn't it happened. And I came in where you were kind of going into, you know, we've had some great popes, and, you know, why didn't this pope do it? Not sure why St. John Paul II didn't do it. And I could be I could be misunderstanding.
No, that's right.
But I'm calling. That. Okay. I'm calling because a little less than a week ago, I was listening to Dr. Mark Maravalli on air with Drew Mariani, And they were talking about this kind of recent call to Pope Francis to consider consecrating Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And Dr. Mirabali was just talking about how when St. John Paul II consecrated the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, that Sister Lucia did publicly state several times that that consecration did satisfy Our Lady's request. And Dr. Mirabali was just stating that if Pope Francis did decide to consecrate Russia again to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, it would not say or indicate that the consecration that St. John Paul II did was invalid or something like that. But it would just be kind of like how we personally can like do a, even a daily consecration to Our Lady or renew our consecration to her on a yearly basis. It would just sort of like bolster that consecration. So I just thought, you know, it kind of gave me pause and was just a little confused. And so I thought I would just give a call and ask.
Sure.
You
no, I appreciate
it.
That. Now, I, of course, didn't hear what you're referring to. I know who Mark Mirabali is, so I'm familiar with his work. But not having heard it, it wouldn't be fair for me to try to comment on something I didn't hear. So let me just speak at a more general level, if I may. This kind of gets to the heart of a debate that's been going on for a long time. I'm not part of the debate. I've never entered into the debate. But there's an ongoing debate about whether or not, a couple of things. Number one, whether or not, in fact, the consecration of the world to the Immaculate Heart of Mary by Pope John Paul II, whether or not that met the request, did that satisfy the request of Mary? And there's a camp that says it absolutely did, and there's a camp that said it absolutely did not. A sub-debate within that larger debate has to do with what I would regard to be kind of crackpot theories, that it wasn't either what Lucia actually said. Keep in mind, she didn't say anything publicly. She didn't come out on a balcony and issue any statement or anything like that. She lived in a cloistered convent her whole life. And so if somebody had permission to come in and speak to her, that person would relate what the conversation contained. Occasionally, she might write something down, and it would be asked to be given to the Pope or given to the bishop, etc. So she wasn't making public statements about any of this, but they were being reported publicly, or at least in Catholic circles, where, let's say, the cardinal who had gone in to visit her said, Sister Lucia, I asked her, was this consecration acceptable to Our Lady? And she said, yes, it was. So it's at that level. And so in these subsidiary or you know, the lower level debates, some people have said, well, that was a fake Sister Lucia. It was an imposter. And they'll even show pictures to say, look at her face is different in this picture compared to that picture. I don't buy into any of those things. But what I'm saying is, on the one hand, it's not in my view, enough to simply say, well, Sister Lucia said that it was okay, therefore it is. I don't think that has been resolved adequately yet, in my view at least. One other thing to remember, Mandy, is that whatever else one might say about this, is that Pope John Paul II, he intended to consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, but he was dissuaded from doing so by, among others, I believe it was Cardinal Casaroli, who at the time was the Secretary of State, and the church had in place for several decades by that point what was called Ostpolitik. And Ostpolitik is the word to describe the Vatican's, more specifically, the Holy See's diplomatic posture toward the Soviet Union and toward its satellite countries, so those member nations, so to speak, of the Soviet Union. And Ostpolitik, as it was promoted in the Vatican diplomatic corps, was intended to not provoke Russia. Let's not provoke them. Let's keep things calm. So he was dissuaded, apparently, from mentioning Russia by name. So no matter how you slice it, he didn't consecrate Russia to the Immaculate Heart of Mary, consecrated the world. So these are all little details that we should try to keep track of. Thank you. I'll be right back.